This is The Topic is Trek, episode 57 for Friday, January 3rd, 2020. Coming up in this episode, we may be psychic. Janeway gets busted. Is lens flare ruining your life? All that right now on The Topic is Trek. Happy Stardate minus 302997.8. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. And just so we're not confused, in the pre-show section, we were thinking that was the topic is Shrek. But we're not going to be talking anything at all about Shrek this evening. Well, hello, everyone.
Challenge accepted.
Oh, my goodness.
This show has layers.
Yes. Okay. Let's get to the introduction, shall we, since everyone's already talking. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts on The Topic is Trek. And joining me, as always, first of all, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey! Happy New Year, everybody.
Well, Happy New Year to you. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
That whole clip about Patrick Stewart saying, my goodness, look at the time. It's 302.997.8. Minus, Rose, let's wrap this up before 302.999, shall we?
It rolls right off the tongue, by the way.
It does indeed. I don't know why. If you're wondering, I got that from an online calculator that calculates star dates. So is it right? Is it wrong? Blame the internet, I say.
I'm glad we're on a calendar that we're counting backwards again.
Yes. Did they do that in, BC? I think they just, it's very confusing. We're counting down to zero here, aren't we? I don't know. Well, I guess we're counting down to one because we get that whole issue of, did the 20s start on New Year's this year or New Year's next year?
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. But let's not get into that. We're going to get into a couple of things. But first, we have interesting things going on, including, Craig, you're going to be making an upcoming visit to outer space in a way.
Yeah, in a way. Actually, NutriZone Studios, where they film the Star Trek Continues,
mm-hmm.
They're actually having an open, they have the whole set, of course, they built out for the fan films. And they're doing an open house. So they do this from time to time. They invite all the fans to come and tour the sets and so on and so forth. And it's in Kingsland, Georgia. And I'm going to be heading down there. It's January 18th. So I don't know if you hear this in time, come check it out. I think they got several dates on the calendar for Fan Day already, but that's the first one. And so I'm going down there with my old friend. And I think Gary Lindros is going to be there as well. And cool. It's going to be a friend of ours and friend of the show. And I think it's going to be a good time. I don't know if they're going to have any special appearances like the one in Ticonderoga.
Right.
They do that, from time to time. They had William Shatner there. Mount was there.
Yeah, they've been to Ticonderoga.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. So they went to those, but I don't know if anybody's going to be here. So I'm trying to figure, I got to procure a uniform or something so I can take some pictures.
Don't you have your pajamas or something from the cruise?
Yeah.
I've got my tie-dyed Star Trek shirt.
That would not work totally. So absolutely do not wear that at all. And especially if you're going to identify yourself as being, why don't you wear your The Topic is Trek shirt instead? Your t-shirt.
Ding, ding.
I could do that.
Excellent. Excellent. And it'll be interesting to see your photos from that, and then we can compare them with the photos from the Ticonderoga set that I've been to and see how they match up with each other.
Yeah. So I'm going down that Friday. So I'm going to be there pretty much when they start at 9 o'clock. I think it's from 9 to 6 on Saturday, January 18th. So I'll be there as long as I can and take all the pictures I can. I'm
so going to
take
pictures present?
Of everything. Let me
take a birthday present.
Sort of. My birthday's shortly after the 18th. So yeah, that's what I was kind of counting on. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe. Depends. Depends on what else I get. This might be it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not going to make you a cake or anything. I'm just letting you know right now. So
yeah, actually I don't do cake for my birthday. You know what I do?
What do you do?
Lemon meringue pie.
Oh.
I don't know. My mom asked me when probably around 10 or so what I wanted for my birthday. I said lemon meringue pie. It was like this delicacy. I think I heard somebody talk about how difficult it was to cook or make from scratch.
I hope you like marshmallow.
Yeah. So what I do.
All right. Well, we'll hear more about Craig's trip into space. And by space, I mean someplace in Georgia. coming up in an episode or two from now. But right now, it's time to do that segment of the show that everyone wants more of. And of course, that is subspace chatter. Am I right?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Well, there's one person who doesn't want more of it.
I was hoping in 2020 that Charlie would just come on our side with this whole thing, but apparently not.
There's no way we're going to get him to re-record that.
No. And he probably wouldn't anyway, but we're going to move on anyway, Charlie. And Chuck has our first story.
I do, because we are mere days away from the premiere of Star Trek Picard, and a new trailer has dropped about a week ago from the time we're recording this in the form of a 30-second TV spot. In it, we get to see some more shots of Riker and Troy. And is it my imagination, but does Jonathan Frakes just keep getting taller?
Or maybe Picard keeps getting shorter. I don't know.
Marina and Patrick are just getting shorter. We also get to see some other intriguing shots, one of which implies that Starfleet is up to no good. And I think we've got that vibe before where Jean-Luc is saying, I'll do whatever it takes or whatever must be done. And not that we haven't seen Starfleet bend the rules before.
Right.
To do what they need. But as a reminder, Star Trek Picard premieres on January 23rd. We've got a link to the video if you haven't already seen it. And somehow this one went under my radar, but I was on a cruise, so who knows what else I've missed over the last week or so. So we have a link in the show notes over at thetopicistrek.com, episode 57.
Excellent. Yeah, and Starfleet has indeed bent those rules before, including one of the Next Generation movies. So it will be interesting to see what happens. And we're so close. All right. We're going to move from Star Trek Picard to Star Trek Picard for our next story.
Wow. What a segue.
Don't move that chess piece too far down the board.
Hey, by the way, in our last episode, we all did predictions, right?
Yep.
And looks like I'm already one up on you guys. One of mine came true already.
What?
So CBS All Access has already greenlit season 2 of Picard. That was one of the things I said we were going to hear about.
It is.
I think we all had some low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, that's right. So Sir Patrick Stewart also seemed to take I guess last September that there would be a second season. I remember him saying, there might be, telling a reporter, I'm clearing the decks for that. And there's also the possibility of a second Picard series filming in March of next year. So it looks like he's ready to go for a second season.
Sweet.
Right. So they'll start filming, depending on how those dates go, like right around the same time season 1 ends. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they'll be filming in March next year. Is next year referring to 2021?
Yes. No, 2020.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, they're going to have to move fast.
He didn't do this interview today.
We all love Patrick Stewart, but he's not getting any younger. Let's hurry this up.
Wow. Wow. Really?
Craig, you better hope he's not listening to this episode.
My announcer is going to be on your tail. Yes.
I know. Well, I don't know. Hey, lots of love for him. Let me stress that.
Well, and now for my first story, remember how Craig said he was one up on Chuck and I? Well, yes. Apparently not so, because now one of my predictions looks like maybe coming true as well. And that is, I predicted Quentin Tarantino would drop plans to direct his Star Trek film. Well, during an interview with the podcast Consequence of Sound, the director said, quote, "I think I'm steering away from Star Trek." He went on to comment, "In a strange way, it feels like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would be my last. So I've taken the pressure off myself to make that last big voila kind of statement." Of course, Tarantino's is not the only Star Trek film currently in development. Thank goodness. As we mentioned back in episode 55, Noah Hawley has been named as writer-director of the next Trek movie in the Kelvin timeline. Mm-hmm. Or so we believe, because in an interview with Gold Derby, actor Simon Pegg said, quote, "I don't know anything about it. I think Noah Hawley's been hired to write something for Star Trek, which is very exciting. He's a brilliant writer and always creates interesting stuff. Whether or not we're involved with that, I don't know. I don't think so, and I don't know Noah's thing is necessarily going to be Star Trek IV. So I feel like we're almost back to knowing nothing after just being at the point where we knew that there were two Star Trek movies coming up.
I think this is a show game.
I may or may not be involved in writing something for a future Star Trek movie.
Okay. I can see
Let's expand that. All three of us.
Yes. And we may or may not be going out to California in March to film parts for Picard season 2. I'm just saying.
Yeah. We got some tax credits in our respective states, to film something.
Oh yeah. That $5 is kind of, but anyway,
the topic is non-committal Trek tonight.
Indeed. Or is it? I don't know. Can't decide.
I think it's a shell game. I think it's, everything's in the mix. And we won't know until we know. That's
right. I'm hoping this year brings some clarity to what the heck is going on. Now they're trying to shake everything out with everybody merged back together
again. Or we'll find out after we record the show. We'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow. That's usually how our recording timeline goes, isn't it?
And when you people listen, you go, "Well, what are you talking about? They already made that announcement like 2 days ago." All right. Yeah. But we're right now in the present, which to you is the past, which leads me into a discussion about the future, which leads me into the distant future about Star Trek Discovery. And Chuck has a story about that. And boy, that was a stretch that I just made there, but let's go with it.
I think you would have been better taking that prison string and pulling on it. But anyway,
yeah, right. I suppose.
Star Trek, Craig, get your cursor out of there. Your flag is in the way. Stop doing that, man. I'm going to just like highlight stuff on you and see what you can read.
Okay.
The fun of doing show notes in Google Docs and everybody's cursor jumps and goes, "Craig Stepp is here. I'm reading Star Trek. Craig Stepp." No. "Star Trek Discovery is finally out of prison." No, really, we mean it. The production team recently spent 2 weeks filming scenes inside Kingston Penitentiary in Kingston, Ontario. The former prison is one of Canada's oldest and most notorious detention facilities. It also features some amazing architecture. And if you've seen the pictures online, you'll know what I'm talking about. It looks more like a palace in some ways. There's no word on whether or not the location was used as some sort of future prison, or the production just took advantage of the really cool 1835 structure. Again, follow the show notes, and you can even Wikipedia the heck out of Kingston Penitentiary.
Wow. Tellin' Penitentiary. There we go.
In Kingston, Ontario. Not Kingston, Jamaica. Not Kingston, New York.
Or Kingston, Rhode Island. None of those.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they, of course, I then went through a couple of articles to see if there was any clue. No clue. So we really don't know. Just because that's what it was doesn't mean that's what they're using it for.
I'm dying of curiosity now to see if you can spot any trace of the penitentiary in the show.
Well, they're in the future. So unless this is some weird flashback or something, I think it will kind of stand out as this building that, where did that come from? Or, you know, they're visiting some ancient ruin or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably, or just a structure built sometime in the future.
But it still could be used as a prison, for all we know.
Well, we also don't know when it's coming on.
That's true.
Giorgio's vacation home.
We're back to knowing nothing, aren't we? We're just kind of like in the dark once again about everything going on.
Why do people listen to this podcast? There's no news here.
I don't know.
Yeah. We're not even sure we're going to produce this podcast.
We may not be recording for all we know.
Oh, look, I may not have hit record button.
Don't start that.
All right. Well, Craig, save us with the next story.
Okay. You know, you can't just keep a good Star Trek villain down. And who's more villainous than Khan Noonien Singh? That's right. He's back. And at least the comics, for sure. You know, it's the comics, so you can bring anything back. And Chuck DeMasi.
Oh, man. Yep. He's now moving his cursor around Craig's story.
Ain't that fun?
As part of their 2020 March lineup, IDW Publishing has announced Star Trek Hell's Mirror. And it will be our introduction to the Mirror Universe version of our genetically altered Superman. No word on whether this version of Khan will be a peace-loving hippie looking to spread love rather than destruction. I was thinking more like, you know, the Mirror Universe, Mr. Rogers.
I was thinking a lot about Khan this last week because I've been watching The Witcher on Netflix.
Ah, yes.
And he looks a lot like Khan to me when you first see him.
Oh, a little bit.
The long white hair.
Are you enjoying that, by the way?
He also looks like a genetically altered Superman.
Yeah.
Since it's the actor who played Superman. Never mind.
I see what you did there.
Thank you so much. So, I mean, we know that in the Mirror Universe, it's not a given that everybody whose personality X is personality Y in the other universe, but it would raise some interesting questions. I mean, if everybody is so amped up and cutthroat in the Mirror Universe, well, what makes Khan any different?
Right.
Than anyone
That's
else.
That's kind of why I like the peace, love, and hippie thing.
Yeah.
We've been genetically engineered to pass out flowers.
Yeah.
And to head out to Eden. Yay, brother.
With Craig in his tie-dye shirt.
I've been genetically engineered to love harder.
There you go.
Why do you wear your hair in such an uncomplimentary fashion?
Here, let me fix that for you.
With some rich Corinthian. All right, let's stop with that.
Anyway. Yeah, all right.
We'll move on from there. And as we were talking about the intro to the show being a Stardate, do Star Trek timelines confuse you?
Yes.
Not Stardates particularly, but timelines. Well, if you're like me, and I know I am, they sure do. That's why an article recently published on Screen Rant may prove to clear away lots of confusion. The article covers many of the major events in both the various TV series and movies. For instance, how long was it between the end of Star Trek Enterprise and the beginning of Star Trek Discovery? Turns out that was 95 years. When did the Vulcan ship crash in Carbon Creek, Pennsylvania? That would be 1957. When did the Genesis device explode during the battle in the Mutara Nebula? Well, that would be in 2285. So you can check out the article available in the show notes over at thetopicistrek.com. And you can watch the article rapidly become out of date as Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, and the rest fill in more and more of our future history. You know, I just thought of that as I'm reading the article going, okay, this is great until the next show premieres, and then they rewrite this and, you know, retcon that, and things are all out of whack again. But it was very nice. I thought at first it was just going to be an article that listed the major events in order, but it actually breaks down some subsections of it about major events and about, you know, individual series where things were happening. So it's a lot of different timelines and the way to look at things in there. And so I would urge you to check it out over at The Topic is Trek.
Ding.
Wow.
Ding. I was looking at something else.
Ah,
the looking at
my cursor. My cursor going around your article there, right? topicistrek.com. All right. And Chuck, come back from the future and your cursor movements and all those type of things. Back here to Earth for a story about an actor who is not Captain Kirk.
You're right. Or Picard. We have a non-Picard story.
Yay!
Yeah, we need that.
Star Trek War.
And one more follow-up story. A few episodes ago, we talked about a fundraising campaign, the goal of which was to erect a monument to Catherine Janeway in her future hometown of Bloomington, Indiana.
Good news, everyone!
The goals were met, and the monument will be unveiled in Bloomington on May 23rd, 3 days after the fictional birthday of Captain Janeway. Why would they make it 3 days after?
Probably on the weekend, I'm assuming.
No, that could be. The bust will sit atop a limestone base in the shape of the Starfleet insignia and will feature an informational table with information about USS Voyager Captain series writer and producer Jerry Taylor, a Bloomington native, and their local connections. No word yet as to whether or not Ms. Mulgrew will be in attendance. However, the actress had to sign off on the design of the bust and had input into which hairstyle, because we've all seen that video about the hairstyles of Janeway, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were many, many, many of them. It is well known that Mulgrew was never happy with the bun hairstyle her character supported in the first few episodes of Voyager. So that will be interesting, which one they go with. I'm not particular.
I think the article, they were asked to use the shorter hairstyle with a side part that she has later in the series.
Okay.
So there we go.
And maybe we can ask her on the cruise.
Yes. You can ask her, hey, are you going to the ceremony?
Yeah.
Have you booked your tickets?
We booked your ticket.
They did get official sanction from CBS to do this, and actually CBS was kind of like the liaison, apparently. Actually, I'm just looking at the dates here. May 23rd? I'm just looking for May 20. Yeah, May 23rd is a Saturday, so that's why.
Okay. And we have Dos Equis more stories, apparently.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot to count up the amount of stories we got.
When you have extra stories.
That's right. You want to drink a beer to read all these stories that we were coming up here. So they had to provide the photos that the artist worked with. And then, of course, you have input from Mulgrew on this and everything. So it'll be interesting to see the bust when it is revealed.
Did it say what material this statue or sculpture will be out of?
It might have, and I didn't make note of that. I'm not sure if it's bronze or not. It's probably in there someplace.
Marble, granite.
And I take it for granted, but it's actually marble. Anyway.
Gold press latinum.
I was going to say old Jungle Cruise joke. Okay. But yes, as was made allusion to, we've covered all these stories, but there are still a lot more stories, so many stories that I couldn't count them on my fingers on my toes, left to discover. And you can check all the additional stories out if you go to the show notes for episode 57 over at The Topic is Trek. .com. All right. Now, if we can all put our various cursors away for a minute, too. So we are going to come back there's one that's popping up again. If we can come back from subspace chatter.
Punch cards.
Let me just get that read up there and tear that off. And okay. Yeah. And we actually have a main mission and what I'm calling a side quest that we're also going to be doing based on a question from one of our listeners. But let's go out on a main mission first. And that is one that will require ye old spoiler alert.
Oh, boy. This one?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Yes.
That warms my heart.
That one. Hear that. Because we are going to be discussing the graphic comic Picard Countdown Part 2. So if you have not had a chance to check that out yet, you can, I know you can purchase it via Kindle, but you purchased it through a different source, didn't you, Craig?
I got it through Google Books.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
had a coupon code thing.
Okay. And I think there's also, I'm sure, a physical book that you can get in your local comic book shop.
Yes, it is a real book. Yeah.
Okay. This was, again, written by Kristen Bayer and Mike Johnson with art by Angel Hernandez. And this is the published synopsis about this part 2. As the situation on the Romulan colony on Uyet Beta continues to unravel, Picard finds himself faced with a difficult choice that will affect millions.
Millions.
Millions. Now, I'm going to give some additional information here as a jumping off point. Picard and Massacre learn that the native Uyati people are keepers of secrets about their world, and that some simple Romulan Vinters are actually members of the Tal Shiar.
Dun, dun, dun.
Governor Shiana still believes the Federation is out to destroy the Romulan people and plans to steal the USS Verity. So a lot goes on in this episode, in this this second part of it. I've heard some people say, well, that was kind of like not much was revealed in there. I'm going, I think a lot is going on in this one. I mean, first of all, the fact that these people who we saw very briefly in the first part of the story as just working on at Chateau Picard, yeah, and having a conversation.
Basically dismissed by the Romulans. Oh, no, don't worry about them.
Yeah, they're Tal Shiar. And so they're, you know, the equivalent of, you know, very secret service, undercover, high level CIA-ish type of characters, James Bond-ish type of thing. It's like, these are kind of significant people to just be hanging around a vineyard. What's going on here?
Right.
And we get to find out that there are plans within plans, apparently, on the governor's part, that just getting her people off the planet was not the end goal of why the Verity was summoned to the planet. We have most of the same players as we did in the last episode, although for the first half of it, Commander Massacre is in the prison cell while Picard is about roaming around having a meal and, you know, doing all sorts of stuff that the captain or the admiral would do in this case. And then she gets rescued and she's there for the second part of it. We also get introduced to a new character. I predict a very short-lived character, the person in charge of the Verity while Admiral Picard is away. That's Lieutenant Newton, who seems to go by the book. I don't feel like anything he was doing was necessarily wrong, but man, it goes awful pear-shaped, as one would say, for this guy. Because the ship gets taken away from him, you know, it's not good. It's right. Not good. I don't know. What were your first impressions of it? I know that, Chuck, you have not, I believe you have not read it yet.
I have not read it yet.
Okay. But Craig, what were your impressions of this chapter?
Pretty much exactly what you stated so far. I remember thinking, where you could see the whole situation was starting to unravel, and it wasn't turning out quite like Picard had hoped. So you can kind of see where this is going towards the series, why, you know, where he is at the beginning of the series.
Which is interesting, because the third, I was just looking on Google Books, like you said, Craig, mm-hmm. and number three isn't due out until January 31st, which is after the series is engaged. So I'm wondering what they're going to do to tie that together.
Well, move your cursor down. You can see that we'll be discussing that in a little bit.
All right.
There you go. But yes, I mean, that is a good point, that I don't think we're going to, you know, we will not get the conclusion to the story. And I don't know whether it's because of spoilers for the series or not. But
well, I imagine at the very beginning, kind of an origin type thing, you know, they'll give a little backstory why he's not in Starfleet, and I'm sure it's going to tie in with that.
What I'm finding interesting, though, is that it's not a lot of time on this planet so far. I get the feeling we're only talking about the matter of a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like,
I didn't think it was that long, but yeah.
Well, he was
in jail. They were in cells for a while.
Right. So. I don't know whether that was because there's also, you know, Picard is concerned that maybe something has happened to Massacre. She's being tortured or something. So I'm assuming some amount of time has passed. So I'm giving it, say, maybe just the next day that this stuff is going on. But time is really, it's an unknown as far as how long these people, anybody has to get out of the path of this thing. And you spend 2 days kind of like, you know, tooling around the planet. It's like, hey, dude, you know, gotta get this thing moving here.
Well, and they've already been evacuating people up to this point.
right,
on another planet. So this is an ongoing mission,
right?
So some time has passed. We don't know that span either, but well, wait a minute, do we? So the beginning of the episode, it was like a year. It's remember it said it was about a year before.
Mm.
So this has been, they've been going on for about a year.
Oh, that's right. That's when I was having that confusion about what was the timeline at that point. And you were able to finally correct me on,
yeah,
here's the deal.
Yeah. They stated, I can't remember it now, but they stated a couple of star dates and I went, oh, so I went and looked at Memory Alpha and kind of pieced together a couple of things, but yeah, it's about a year or so before the event, before, he gets kicked out of Starfleet.
So I'm
this comic, the two comic issues, they take place about a year before. And I think at some point they knew that the supernova was coming. And so they've been working to remove all the Romulans. And it's just, this is like, I guess the last few colonies left.
Well, and so what I'm not seeing so far, and I obviously it's not necessarily addressed in the comic because I think it's more for the actual show, is nothing that's happened so far I consider earth shattering enough for Picard to go, yep, that's it, I'm out of here. So I'm not sure whether we will be treating this countdown story as perhaps backstory about the two Romulans who are at Chateau Picard, because we find out much more about them in this mm-hmm. part of the story, or something that happens to that race that is, you know, the native race that is something. I'm just saying that it seems like, well, Picard has been in this type of situation before. This is not the sort of thing that would force him out.
No, the problem is he was told, you got this one sect of Romulans that say, hey, just rescue us and we'll be good. And then Picard was like, no, wait. There's some indigenous people here. I can't just leave everybody, and including them. We're talking millions of people now instead of, you know, I guess a few thousand. Now we're talking millions of people. And so he's going to stand up for that, you know,
right. Which is
side of life and want to do the right thing.
Right. Which is interesting because it brings me to one of two things that I spotted in this story. I went, I think that's inconsistent within the story itself. There are things that might be, some people are considering inconsistent in the way things work in the Trek universe. But I thought it was interesting that when the governor contacts the Verity, says, you got to get us out of here. And she says that, you know, the natives have attacked the, you know, their outpost.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lieutenant says, oh, well, you know, we have to contact Starfleet about this, but of course we'll beam you up and anybody that's been injured and blah, 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 blah. He doesn't say, wait, natives? There's a native population on this planet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that was a surprise to Picard when he got down there, that there was this native people on the planet, and he never got a chance to contact the ship, as far as I know, to say, oh, we've got a problem, because by that point, a message would have been relayed to Starfleet saying, bring a bunch of vessels, because yeah, we can't accommodate millions of, you know, potentially millions of you know, refugees on our ship.
Well, they, and that, and if you remember, well, I know you remember, in the first issue, Geordi was actually working to make some kind of fleet that they could rescue her buddy.
Right.
So they didn't have the capacity to even do, they were trying to do already.
So I guess you could maybe rack that up as some, because he was an inexperienced officer that was getting past him because he was concerned about what possibly had happened to the admiral. And that he was just hearing attack, you know, thinking his question after that is, you know, where is Admiral Picard and the commander? So maybe that's why. And then the other thing that most people that I checked out some reviews after I had written down my notes. Mm-hmm. Most people didn't notice that when they take over the ship, that the governor says, well, we'll have to thank our benefactor if we ever happen to meet. Hmm. Like, somebody gave them the information about how to take over the Verity.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't Picard. It was somebody she hasn't met who provided that information.
It was the guy that gave him access to the computer console.
But she sees him right there, so it's not him.
Yeah, well.
So, this is another layer down into what's going on here. Because you not only have this plan, but you have somebody on the inside, in the Federation, in Starfleet. You know, I don't know if this is almost like, you know, the incident at Kittimer when you find out that, you know, half of the ambassadors are in on this, this plot for one reason or another. So I think that was like almost a throwaway line to most people, but I thought, no, there's something else going on here.
Yeah. You might be right. Yep.
But overall, I thought it was good. We also had another one of these, secondary books, kind of, a single chapter from another Star Trek story. A different art style, different crew working on it the same way we did with the first Picard one. And this one was back in Picard's days on the Stargazer.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right.
Right. And so it's with Beverly and Jack, although they're not married at that point. So she's, I can't remember her maiden name in this, but she's still going by her maiden name.
Yep.
So that was an interesting, it was, The style threw me because it was almost like this watercolorish type of look, and sometimes the character faces were a little off and oddly done. But I think it seemed like it was one of these experimental comics, you know, kind of like, let's just take a look and mm-hmm. see what we can do with this kind of look to you know, to something in there. So, but I'd definitely say, you know, pick this up. It may not be critical to check this out before Picard, but I think it could provide some background information that they probably are not going to go into a lot of detail on. And it just gives you information like with the first for 2009, you get backstory on Nero and his relationship to Spock and why he's so angry about, you know, what is happening.
Oh, well, yeah, we need some background on that.
Yes.
Oh, Dr. Howard. That was what she was going. That was her maiden name.
Yeah, it was Scottish clan.
Ah. All right. And now to the thing that Chuck was just mentioning is that we have our timeline, as best as I can figure out, about all the things connected with Picard. And they're in very odd order of when we're going to have access to them.
Yeah.
Because the first one is the next short trek, which is Children of Mars. And that is a tie-in. It's a prequel tie-in to Picard. And the interesting thing there is, obviously, it's supposed to take place on Mars, one assumes, because it's Children of Mars. And in the commercial that we referenced earlier, Picard is sitting in 10 forward on the Enterprise. Now, it's current-day Picard, having some sort of flashback, we assume. And out the view windows in 10 forward, you see what clearly appears to be Mars being attacked. Now, this has nothing to do with the story we've gotten so far in this countdown book, because we're not talking anything about Mars. Although we are talking about the shipyards. So I suppose the shipyards could be involved in this in some way, because those are in orbit around Mars.
And as we've seen on short treks before, they have a way of revealing themselves in time. So we may not see the answer to this for a while.
So I'm going to throw out a theory that I think would tie in with one of Craig's predictions.
I'm getting another one right.
Maybe, because this is just a guess on my part. I can't remember if it was you or Chuck at this point. One of you said that a beloved Star Trek The Next Generation character would die?
I think that was Chuck, wasn't it?
I think that was me. I was going dark on you.
I don't predict death.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's an attack on Mars and the, you know, the shipyards are at Mars and Geordi is at the shipyards.
No, not Geordi.
I have no knowledge of whether or not that's true. Just jumping from point A to point Z without any connecting tissue in between.
Playing Frogger with us here.
Exactly. Yeah, right. All right. So we have that on January 9th. Then we jump all the way to January 23rd, which is the first episode of the 10-part Star Trek Picard series. Then we jump to the 29th, which is after just the first episode has premiered. The second one would be on the 30th. So the day before the second episode, part three of the comic comes out.
Same authors.
Yep.
And artists. Is that significant that something gets revealed in the comic that just feeds directly into what's going on in episode two? I don't know. And then we jump ahead again to February 11th, which is mid-run of Picard, and a novel entitled The Last Best Hope, labeled as a lead-in to the Picard series, comes out for release.
I thought that was the last episode of Star Wars, The Last Best Hope.
Yes. I thought it was Babylon 5, The Last Best Hope. But
and then we jump forward one more time to March 1st through 8th, where Craig and I will be on the Star Trek cruise.
Yeah.
And you'll have all the answers by that point, so you can discuss everything with everyone. So the order of this stuff is really odd. You assume it's done that way on purpose, that there must be something in the third part of the comic that you don't want people to know before the first episode of the series comes out. I don't know why in particular. Maybe even makes a reference to something that happens. It's not like about the first episode, but there's almost a flashbacky reference to motivation that comes out of what we see in part one. I don't know. I think the one that throws me though is the novel that's coming out that's labeled as a lead-in, and it comes out three episodes into the show. I can't figure that one.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here waiting for January 9th at this point to get our next clue as to what's going on. I'm, you know, those episodes are short, hence short treks. I'm hoping there's a little bit more to latch onto though, that will give us more of a clue of how this all works together. But I'm knowing how the short treks go. As Chuck said, I think it's kind of, well, here's a story. Doesn't seem to connect to anything. And we'll revisit that in like 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
It's a jigsaw puzzle, and we don't know what the final picture looks like, but we're going to get a piece at a time.
Yeah.
Exactly. So any more thoughts from you, Craig, on the part two of Countdown?
No, other than I'm kind of enjoying it. You pointed out a couple things that I didn't really pick up on, and I think it's good.
Yeah. And the artwork is very nice. Very well done.
And of course, we got a little love thing going on with a couple of Romulans.
That's right. That's right. Aw.
Yeah. They're capable of love, too.
They are. Even the Telshay are. All right. And now on to our side quest that I mentioned. We have a question from one of our listeners, Ken. And he dropped us a note over on Facebook saying, a question for the panel. So that's the panel. We're here. I'm hearing from fans who are complaining that for medical reasons, they can't watch shows with lens flare. Does the panel have any suggestions on how to handle this issue? Are the powers that be at Picard and other shows aware of this issue? And he says there's a thread to this issue on the Picard Facebook page, which, you know, there's lots going on there. So I didn't get a chance in particular to check that out. I wasn't able to track down anything in particular about lens flare when it comes to triggering medical conditions. Of course, the first thing that came to mind was the issue of rapidly flashing strobe type lighting. Right.
Right. Yeah. I've seen that on plenty of shows. Plenty of shows have that warning.
Right.
Yeah. I thought for sure that, I mean, I wouldn't say lens flares actually. Okay, let me back up. I'm not going to say for sure. I'm not a doctor. So I didn't think lens flares would actually do that. But like you said, Chuck, strobing lights.
Right. And the closest I could find was migraines that are caused by sensitivity to light. And if that's what we're talking about, then TV or movie shows in general can be an issue. And in the show notes, I have a link to an article about light sensitivity, which is also known as photophobia. Hmm. So you can check that out for information about triggers on that. And but again, I'm not sure if that really specifically addresses this issue, but it was the closest I could get saying, well, that you suddenly have that kind of bright section on the screen, and maybe that is just a bit too much. And if anyone has more information they can provide that will help those affected by this issue, please send us a note or, you know, put something on our Facebook page. And as to whether or not the powers that be at Picard or other shows are aware of the issue, I would hazard a guess to say no, because I don't think anyone would go out of their way to make their shows totally unwatchable to viewers.
Well, and I think they're probably aware of it to the point where they would go, oh, it's in here, so let's put a warning on it.
Right. And I said, at the very least, what they would do is, as they do with strobe effects, is to have some sort of, you know, thing that this could potentially cause problems. The interesting side note to the side quest is that while I was researching the issue about lens flares, I know we always talk about, oh, JJ, you know, he, you know, brought back the lens flare and just used it to the hilt. And, you know, it's now showing up on, you know, Discovery. It shows up on lots of shows on television. Yeah. And curse you, JJ. Well, I have a link to a YouTube video, again, in the show notes over at the topic is Trek.
Ding.com
for episode 57 that talks about the much longer history of lens flare, and its reemergence really goes back to the 60s.
Yeah, I loved that video. Very informative. I thought that was very enlightening on the whole evolution of what it is, how we tried to avoid it, the lengths that filmmakers went to avoid it, and then how it came back. And like you said, in the 60s, and then it just sort of progressed, and now it's in everything. There's even people that are purposely trying to put it in where it wasn't before.
Exactly. Well, I believe in, at least into Darkness, I know, and probably 2009, JJ actually did put in afterwards lens flare when he didn't have it in the shot that he wanted it to be in.
Post-production?
Yeah. Thing? Yep. Mm-hmm. That they did it on set, but if the shot didn't have it and they wanted to have it there, and he had his own reason for using the lens flare that he discussed, which is essentially almost the cliche of saying the future is so bright, I got to wear shades, that type of thing.
Right.
But really, when you watch the video, you find out that, well, different people use lens flare to mean different things. And this is just one reason why you would use it. So very interesting. Again, it's kind of like a side note to a side quest, but hopefully you'll find the video interesting.
I like the things that I have seen, of course, 2009 Star Trek, it was overused for sure, but I did like the use of it per se, because it did give it a little more of a futuristic aesthetic, I thought. But, you know, another things I've seen, I think it's been used well, but yeah, you can seriously overdo it.
Right, which is why I've brought to mind thinking that, well, you've suddenly have these almost whiteout conditions in right. a shot. Yeah. And you know, if you're not in a bright shot to begin with, and you're watching television and you have this photophobia, boom, all of a sudden it gets really bright. And I can see that could potentially be a problem for those people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that finishes up. Again, if you have any follow-ups, if you have any further information on this topic, please be sure to drop us a note over at our Facebook page for The Topic is Trek, and we will follow up with another bit here on the show, or certainly, you know, make sure people know about the comment over on Facebook. But right now, it's time to come back from our...
little early.
It happens. Chuck, it happens to lots of guys.
Premature.
I'm compensating for something now, donkey.
Yes, indeed. And it's not Heisenberg. All right. And we're going to go out on our warp speed roundtable, which I don't know, doesn't have necessarily an effect, but I'm sure Chuck is going to press the button anyway. There we go. Yeah. Close enough. We're now in the conference room for our warp speed roundtable. And the table is not really round, but we'll go with
oval.
It anyway.
It's oval.
So last time we reviewed our predictions from the end of 2018 and made a whole new batch of predictions for 2020. And some of which apparently are already coming true. And yes, you can check those out over in our last episode, episode 56. But this time around, the Warp Speed Roundtable is based on an article that I read. And it talks about this person who feels like there's a major problem in Star Trek. Matter of fact, the major problem in Star Trek.
No, and there's bigger problems than this one. If you read through the comments, they're great about how anyone can get access to the mainframe computer core.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just talking about how one can take over the ship from just accessing the computer in the Admiral's ready room.
Right.
But this person feels like the biggest gripe about Star Trek is that no one seems to do anything when a hostile being is beaming in with the intent to do harm. You know, you've all seen those scenes where all of a sudden everybody's standing on the bridge and all of a sudden, say, a Borg comes onto the bridge and then they kidnap the captain. Well, while the Borg is beaming in, or whatever version of beaming
everybody
that
just stands
the Borg
around and watches.
Yeah, you just go, oh, there's something happening.
Like,
what is happening?
It's the first time they've seen. That's a really cool effect.
Yeah.
I never get tired of that.
Yeah, wish we could do that. Oh, wait, we can. So they said, why does no one do anything? And as a matter of fact, I have the solution for that problem, they say. You just toss something at that glowing, yet-to-be-formed mass. Say, like a baseball bat. And the being will finally materialize in the space with the bat in the middle of their chest or in their head or whatever, and either killing them or severely wounding them. Now,
Mr. Worf, release the bees.
Yes, exactly. Bees. I see that Oprah gif. Bees.
Nicolas Cage.
That's right. So I'm going to ask all of you, I'll go first with my thoughts on this, about whether or not you think that's a viable solution to this clearly most egregious of problems. The biggest issue that's in Star Trek is this issue. And I'm going to say my opinion is that it would not work. And it would not work for the simple reason that we'll assume that these aliens have the same type of technology that we have. And I can't believe that you would invent a transporter that would not compensate for the fact that there is debris in the middle of the beaming endpoint. In other words, say you were beaming down to a planet where there was a dust storm going on, or, you know, just other things happening. Even the fall leaves were falling. You can't just randomly have a crewman, you know, suddenly have a leaf embedded in their eye or something like that. You have to be able to compensate for that. And therefore, it's almost like maybe you would have a clearing force field precede the beam down or something like that, so that you cleared the path for the beam. And so I submit that solution would not work.
As a follow-up to that thought, though, they have been told to crouch down, like when they were beaming aboard Baylock's ship.
Baylock's ship, yep.
They had to crouch down, and they've also been told, you know, we wouldn't want to beam you into the middle of a bulkhead or something. So to what point is this debris, or is this part of the surroundings they're beaming into?
Right, well, you have an immovable object like the beam of a ship, as opposed to an object that wasn't there, because you wouldn't have beamed the person into the spot where somebody's holding the baseball bat out. I'm just going to keep with the baseball bat. You would beam them in to the left or to the right of that object. But Now, as you're in the process of beaming, you want to keep that space clear.
Sure.
And how do you go about that? And so I think you would have to clear that space. So that's why I say, but you think maybe they don't do that because they're told, you know, you got to make sure you don't do this.
Your first answer was one of my first answers too, is there's some sort of technology that would clear the path. Maybe the end of that baseball bat just gets dematerialized as a prequel to beaming in. So sticking a baseball bat out there is just going to leave you with half a baseball bat and a person, you know, with a half a baseball bat up against their chest. Mm. It really wouldn't do any good. And I was thinking about that as from a technical standpoint. I said, yeah, there's probably something that says there's something in the way, get it out of the way by hook or crook, or this is an incoming stream, therefore you can't have something coming into the incoming stream as opposed to an outgoing stream when they beam off the ship where they can take something with them. That's right. A different story. So I was thinking there's two different transfer protocols in place, you know, basically a get and a put, if you want to think about it in today's layman's terms. My second answer was really, repeat to yourself, it's just a show. You should really just relax.
Absolutely.
Where have I heard that before?
But well, we're just theoretically, because also, as you pointed out, really, is this the biggest issue with Star Trek? But all right, so you think that probably, again, they'd have something to compensate for this, that
yes.
You would not be able to do this. This is
I'm
not
sure
a solution.
They would have thought of that many moons ago and went, oh, look, someone's beaming on the bridge. Stick a broom handle out.
Wave it around.
And then this person goes, why do we have a broom on the bridge?
Scruffy.
Right.
Scruffy. I see. Scruffy don't care. All right. Let's, Craig, do you think that this clearly logical answer to this whole question would work?
I'm going to go on the side of not, because if the transporter was rematerializing it, I imagine it's using the molecules that are in that space to form what it needs to form. Mm-hmm. So if there was something in that space, it would reform it.
I see.
So you would be made out of part of a baseball bat, is what you're saying.
Well, it would take those molecules and reform them to you, yes.
So it's converting
maybe
the matter into energy back into matter in place.
But my question, if that was the way it was working, and again, this is all just trying to solve a problem that no one has, but if that was the case, if you didn't need all that matter, if you know there was already other matter it was using, you might still have 3/4 of a baseball bat, and that one of those quarters was right in the path of what was being formed. It said, "Well, I don't need all that material, so I'm just going to just use some of it, and there's some left."
I've got hurdy brain.
Okay.
Did we get to the quantum level yet?
I don't know.
Both places at the same time.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's an answer, and I don't know if it's of all the novels that have been out there about Star Trek and fan fiction and everything, I can't think that someone hasn't had a lengthy discussion about how this actually works and how you couldn't do that, because if you could. Well, it ruins a lot of things to begin with.
Yeah.
But it raises so many questions about, well, then you can just beam into places and just the smallest bit of something that happens end up being in that space could kill you.
I expect to see some sort of comedic answer to this on the Orville.
Yes, exactly. No, I like having this third hand. What are you talking about?
They don't have transporters on the Orville.
Oh.
Maybe that's why.
Yes, we have them, but we can't use them.
Because somebody keeps sticking a baseball bat in there.
Right.
They've already figured out the baseball bat defeatist method.
Yeah. Again, my theory doesn't quite hold up, because we've seen people beam into the floor or, and dye, so they're actually mixed with whatever was there.
Well, we saw them in that odd spin, and on the Next Generation, you had that crewman that was half through the floor.
Well, that was because subspace was being disrupted.
Right, yeah, subspace. That was not a transporter issue. It's possible. I mean, you know, you've had things kind of turned inside out because of, but again, it doesn't seem like it was an issue where it was like The Fly, right? Where you have the human and the fly kind of mixing together to form the human fly. A spoiler alert, in case you didn't know. But I don't know. I mean, if anyone out there has read anything or has a different theory about whether or not this would actually work and why, then be sure to leave us a note over on our Facebook page over at facebook.com/thetopicistrek. Ah, the great mysteries of life.
But, and transporters.
That's right. But we have no more time to discuss those because it's the end of the show.
What?
Yeah, we have to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
But I'm not done talking yet.
All right. Well, what do you want to say?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I guess he's done.
Oh, okay.
No, well, called me on it. Huh? Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah. Well, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com, on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, Facebook, Comedy Forecast, MeWe, Comedy Forecast, Instagram, Comedy Forecast, your local laundromat, Comedy Forecast, everywhere. And as I always say, who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, you can find us and our magnificent podcast over at chuckchat.com/technorama. We do that, normally weekly, not over the last month.
Exactly. Holidays, but, man.
Yeah. But anyway, you can go find us over there, and you can find us on the Facebooks and all that stuff. Just the look Facebooks? For... Yeah, the Facebooks. Go look for Technorama Podcast. Search it in Google and you'll find us.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'm looking at the show notes here and part of my outro appears to be missing.
What happened?
I don't know. So quickly, this is how the secret sauce is made.
Wait,
people.
Is it here?
Episode 56.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Rapidly looking up some old show notes because like the good pack rats that we are, we keep everything.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Delete nothing.
Yeah. Keep everything.
I need the old show notes too to show where to start the music.
Phew. All right. Well, you can start the music when I say hit the theme.
All right, Chuck.
He did I guess it. Not.
Yeah. Oh, that was the cue?
That was. if you like the show, even after this, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you, so follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt. I almost got there. I almost got there before I had to cough.
Yeah.
Don't put on what? Spoiler alert.
I don't know. Red shirt, green shirt, blue shirt. I don't know.
I don't.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Got a cough drop?